This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
He is on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. Hi, Tyler. How are you?
All right. How you doing?
Hi, Tyler.
Good. Thanks for taking the time to join us this morning or this afternoon. I'm just curious, you know, we were reading some of that, the 67-page report about trying to get baseball going with regulations and things that would happen to what we would see, I guess, on TV and some of the things that players would have to do to make sure that everyone's healthy to get back and play. Just your thoughts on that and some of the things that have been leaked out from that.
Yeah, it's going to be a much, much different reality if they can pull this off. I mean, it's going to be really bizarre to see, you know, players in the stands, let's say, in the empty stands, to social distance. You know, no spitting, no high fiving, fraternizing. It seems pretty extreme, but you know, because I feel like if you have a game, you've still got to play the game the way it's always played. You know, like. Right. You can't help but be close to other players sometimes, but you know, it's good that they're starting from a point of extreme caution and then seeing what the players how the players respond to that and going from there. I mean, it's before we even get into the financial part of it, so it's a lot of hurdles to cross. But you know, I'm glad they're at least trying and they have a plan.
Tyler, does there come a time here where they just need to say, okay, that's it? And how close might we be to that? You know, I at some point you're going to have to say, yes, we're playing. No, we're not playing. When might that be?
Right. Well, I think that, you know, the fact that they've got this out there, the players are on notice that, you know, that now is the time they should be ramping up to get back in baseball shape if they ever were not, you know, for a mid-June sort of spring training. But it is important that they get this all squared away, you know, so they can get the schedule done and all that. You know, I don't know if there's no formal deadline on this other than just let's get this moving as fast as we can.
How about on the labor front as far as money is concerned? Because 50-50 doesn't sound like it's a fair deal on one side or the other. How are they going to be able to figure out the fiscal ramifications of getting this game back on the field?
That's a huge deal. I mean, I've been hearing that for weeks. This is going to be a real battleground for the sides because the owners see their landscape as changing, but the players really don't. I mean, the players still – player's job is to perform and play the game, and that's what they're paid to do. And they've already, in their minds, they've already had this negotiation. They've already agreed to, you know, not get their salaries in until they play and have them prorated from there. You know, I've heard things like, well, the owners have a great year financially. They don't share the excess profits, you know, with us. We still get what we signed on to get. And if they get a little less than usual, why should that change? So, you know, I think the other backdrop of it here is that the next CBA is coming up at the end of the 21 season, and the owners have had the upper hand in the last couple of negotiations. The players really don't want to set a precedent here that, yes, these are extraordinary times, but, you know, they don't want to set a precedent by saying that when times are tough, we will back down from all the principles that we've always adhere to, which is the free market, and you know, no sort of artificial constraints on that within the form of a formal salary cap or a predetermined sharing proposition.
Tyler Koeppner joining us, national baseball writer for the New York Times. Tyler, even though the players and the owners had an agreement about prorating the salaries over games played, does that agreement also not include playing in front of fans? And doesn't that change the dynamic?
Well, that's what the owners would say, yeah, because there is a clause clearly spelled out. Well, I shouldn't say clearly. It's spelled out in the contract that you know that the sides will have a – if there are no spectators, the sides will have a good faith discussion about the economic feasibility. So what does that mean? Well, I mean, the players think that it means the economic feasibility of going forward with our salaries the way they are. And the owners think, well, no, the word economic means that we're going to have a discussion about changing the economic system for this year. So there's a discussion, there's a difference of opinion there on what that good faith discussion means.
Yeah.
You know, and you're parsing the language here, and some of it's just posturing. I mean, these sides always take till the last minute to figure things out. I mean, it's been 25 years since the last work stoppage. That's a really great history, but the skepticism is running really high right now among the players that the owners are being, you know, truthful about how much they're going to lose, or even if they are being truthful, how much that really matters. I mean, because players, you know, players have a very limited time to make what they can make, and the owners, obviously, even, you know, no matter what happens, the owners are still sitting on a huge asset. I mean, the Royals just sold for $1 billion. So every team is worth a ton of money if the owners really, really get down to it.
It's interesting because your story from the other day was MLB's efforts to return back to the field could take the game back to 94. And it's weird because here in Cleveland, we were in a bubble in 94, despite the fact that baseball shut down. You know, we were on the verge of a great run for the Indians with some great teams and a brand new ballpark. And I mean, it was good times here in Cleveland, even though the game stopped. And I you know, while we were all disappointed the Indians didn't have a chance to make a run at a World Series that year, we knew that there were good things on the horizon once they got back. And I'm wondering, you know, could we be looking at, as far as the big picture of baseball, how far could this, you know, could it set the game back by, you know, just everything that's going on right now, fans that are listening to two sides arguing about money, and how much could it take it back to what you said back in 1994 about the way folks felt about baseball then, outside of Cleveland?
Right, you're right. Cleveland was an outlier there for all those reasons that you mentioned. But yeah, I think that's a huge, huge concern for the owners more so right now, because you know, they're the ones who have to sell tickets. I mean, everybody, they're all in it together, obviously. But man, I mean, could you imagine if they get the health part ironed out, and yet they can't take the field because they can't agree on how to split the money? You are going to have, whenever they come back, it's going to be after a extreme, in this scenario, right? It's going to be coming. Right. They'll be coming back after an extremely long layoff, 17 months, in which many people have lost their jobs or you know, have a lot less money to spend on entertainment anyway. So, I mean, sure, some people will probably come back, and no matter what, they'll love baseball. They'll be desperate to see it. But if you take your product away from the fans for that long, and they believe that the reason is finances, and then you try to come back and sell tickets in a world where people have less money to spend anyway, I think that's just a recipe for a disaster for this industry. So they know they've got to keep their product out there for the people. And honestly, guys, I mean, they have a really good opportunity. They have a really great chance here to just come back, but you know, to help, you know, uplift a lot of fans.
Yeah.
So they really can't afford to blow this one, because the two extremes are, we're really just dealing with two extremes. I think we're dealing with the extreme goodwill of bringing the game back at a time when people need it, or the extreme you know, anger that's going to occur if they can't figure this out and we go without baseball for a year and a half.
Tyler Kepner joining us from the New York Times national baseball writer. Tyler, who cringed more when Blake Snell made the comments that he made last week? The Players Association or the owners?
Yeah. Well, I think the Players Association, I don't know how much they really minded it, because from what I've heard, that's what a whole lot of players are thinking anyway behind the scenes. So that kind of got their truth out there. I mean, I you know, they'd rather it sort of be more delicate because it wasn't a good look, I guess. But it at least communicated their how serious that they are and some of the issues that they're thinking about. And it was obviously really raw and not, you know, stated, you know, tactfully. But I think it really showed how the players, many of the players, truly feel. You know, the owners didn't love that. I mean, the owners didn't love having a player out there. Yeah, I mean, because the owners are trying to sell the players too. It wasn't a good look for baseball. You know, for the whole story, I think it was good because it's sort of unvarnished honesty. And we can you know, understand where a lot of these players are coming from.
All right, Tyler, the million-dollar question or the multi-million-dollar question here in Cleveland, the future of Francisco Lindor, with what's going on now with what hopefully will be a condensed season, how much pressure does that put on the Indians to either get a deal done or try to figure out something? Like, your thoughts on Lindor, his future, and how the Indians, where they kind of stand with him right now, what they should do?
Yeah, I mean, I've talked to people about, you know, whether they can actually construct a deal to keep him. And I wouldn't completely rule it out just because we've seen other small market teams keep their guys for the long term. I mean, Cincinnati's kept Joey Votto, you know, just for a local example. I mean, Milwaukee has kept Chris Braun and now Christian Yelich. So there is some precedent for small markets to do that. But, you know, I think it'd be unlikely just because he's such a great player. He's going to command so much money. And, you know, and the Indians have a history of getting out early on these guys to you know, hasten the rebuild. And to their credit, I mean, it has been pretty effective. I know they don't draw very well. And I know it's got to be really, really lousy to see great former Indians playing well elsewhere, whether it was C.C. Sabathia or Cliff Lee and you know all the names.
Right.
But, I mean, they don't have really, really long, decade-long losing streaks in Cleveland. They are really smart, really well run, and they don't spend that many years without contending. So I don't know what you'd rather have. Like, let's go for it, and then we're gonna, you know, maybe have 12 awful years, but we'll be able to cheer Francisco Lindor and then hope we get some great prospects, you know, in the draft, or just this continually rebuild and take advantage of those small windows. I mean, they've tried. They got a lot of big dudes in there, right? I mean, they, you know, Edwin Encarnacion, they spent a lot for him, and they traded for, you know, Jay Bruce and Andrew Miller, and they really tried to build up there. So, I don't know. I mean, I have a hard time criticizing much of what the Indians do because they avoid those really just long, protracted, endless cycles of losing.
Tyler, your book looks fascinating. K, A History of Baseball in 10 Pitches. General concept of the book. Obviously, it's about pitching, and it looks fascinating, but what inspired you, and what's the concept behind it?
Yeah, it's really just a way to look at pitching through the pitches themselves and the way they all evolved. You know, I talked to over 300 players, pitchers, you know, baseball people, just about each of the pitches, you know, fastball, knuckleball, curveball, changeup, slider, all of them. And it was really fascinating, first, to dig up a lot of historical stuff from the early points of the game, and also just to talk to anyone around I could find who threw one pitch really well. There's actually a lot of Cleveland Indians, you know, history that I came across and included in the book, from going back to, you know, Stan Kovaleski throwing the spitball in 1920, and then, you know, obviously Bob Feller, Bob Lemon. I got into Gene Bearden with his knuckleball in 48. I talked to, you know, Corey Kluber a little bit. Gaylord Perry's in there. So there's a lot of Burt Blyleven. So there's a lot of really great pitchers who passed through Cleveland and had, you know, one particular pitch that really stood out. So it was fascinating to talk to as many people as I could. And, you know, we talked to Roy Halladay at length a few months before he died. You know, I talked to my baseball hero, Steve Carlton, who doesn't do many interviews, obviously. And no. He was great. Another Indian, former Indian.
Yeah.
Briefly.
For about a week and a half.
and of course, Phil Niekro, another Indian. So, yeah, and even a lot, Tommy John. I mean, a lot of people who really passed through Cleveland on their way to building a Hall of Fame type resume. So, yeah, thanks for asking. It's out in paperback now. It's people sitting around their houses missing baseball. This will get them going a little bit, because I really tried to just show how much I love baseball with a kind of a curiosity I have for pitching, and you know, letting these masters tell their stories was really the thrill of my whole career.
Very cool. Tyler, thank you. We're going to go pick up that book, we'll read you in the New York Times as well. Thanks, Tyler.
All right. Take care, guys.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.